everybody. This is Corey with the Nerdy Times. With me always is Dan.
Hello.
And we are in our 99th episode.
The penultimate.
The penultimate episode. We're going to hit our centennial the next time you hear us. 100 episodes and one fan. We're doing great.
We're doing great. on a mostly weekly podcast.
That's right.
Mostly.
We got a lot in store for you today. First of all, and foremost, the darkness people. Scarefest was kind enough to have us back out this year and to tour all the new additions to the their three big attractions that they have here in Missouri. There is always the darkness. They have the Lemp Brewery, and then they have Creepy World, which is like 50 million attractions in one. I mean, it's huge.
18, I think, is what somebody was saying.
Every year they add something new to it. But me and Joe and Dan went out there and we ran the gauntlet, all of them in one night.
Right.
And it was great.
It can be done.
Yes, it can be done. You better get there early. You better have VIP. You better pay for the VIP passes and you better get going quick. But they are popular and, they are pretty lengthy overall. The darkness is about 40 to 45 minutes long. They added a little bit to the which is my favorite part of it is the creepy visions.
Yeah, that, which is the one I don't, you know. Well, because the whole scare fest, you know, all of them are like the pretty much the biggest haunted houses in the St. Louis area.
They're one of the biggest in the country.
In the country, yeah, because it was a big deal. And I know we've talked about them a little bit. I think we mentioned them briefly last year, right? Because you and Joe went.
Yeah, Joe
but
and
I
went
didn't
last
go.
Year. You
That's
didn't get
right.
a chance to go last year.
2 years ago, I went. And it's like they really have prided themselves and pushed themselves on being the kind of the Hollywood special effects type haunted house. They really want to bring that. You know, whether it's animatronics or actors in makeup.
Right.
You know, set pieces.
Yeah. In my opinion, they don't skimp, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot to see. There's some, and it's just depending on what you want, what you're looking for in your haunted house. The darkness is the most theatrical.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely has.
It is the one I consider, like, when you think of a haunted house, the darkness is the haunted house when you think of haunted houses.
Yeah, it's like if you're going to go to if you're going to pay for a haunted entertainment, the darkness is what you want, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They have a number of animatronics. They have an undead T-Rex. You know, they have giant snakes and alligators and spiders and actors and, you know.
And the terror visions, which is the 3D painted.
Haunted carnival at the end,
haunted carnival.
Is honestly, I know everybody has their thing. That's my favorite part of it. To me, I'm very impressed with the quality of the fact that the 3D really does give. Yeah, some of it is almost acid trippy in its
the tunnel is
yeah.
I will say that the Doctor Who time tunnel vortex to hell thing is very. Very, it is very effective, even though you know what's happening,
right?
Because you walk down this like gantry, and you're surrounded by this turning
tunnel.
Image, and it's all these different colors, and it's kind of strobey
and everything in it,
and it gives you vertigo like crazy. You literally think you're walking like at a 45 degree angle,
yeah.
When you know you're not, you're just walking across this thing, but it is incredibly effective.
Yeah, it's mind-bending, the effect that it has. And every year, I mean, they have extended that. And one of the things that I've noticed that they did this year that they hadn't had as much of in the past, but they've always had some of it, but they've really added a lot more of it, was the video screen.
Mm-hmm.
Like they had the portraits that would kind of come to life and they'd scream at you or whatever.
Spray water through the portraits that are... Or I should say the video screens that were like a window, and then stuff would happen and the window would break, quote unquote, and then there would be a gust of air and like a spritz of water would come out at you, like an air cannon.
They had a number of those this year, and I tell you the truth, it's what you would kind of like to see is the next step. They got like a boiler where some guy's in there and he's roasting alive and he's screaming for you to let him out. And they got a guy that's being eaten alive by a zombie, and then the zombie runs up and busts the window. They got, oh, just a number of things.
The other thing that I thought was really effective, and I didn't go last year, but the mirror reflection ones where it looked like there were all like 100 zombies coming down the hallway.
It's an amazing effect, and it's really cool because you don't really see yourself,
which
would throw away off the effect altogether. Yeah. But they have this looming dark corridor, which the first year I think we went was empty, and it just had like paper.
It just had stuff, yeah,
paper and stuff blowing around like this empty hospital hallway. Now it is teeming full of zombies.
You know, the room is probably only like five or seven feet deep.
Yeah.
But when you look at it now, it looks like it goes on for like a mile.
Yeah.
And there's all these zombies kind of hanging out back there. And I think another one had, was it clowns or something? It had something else there that was
two sides of that corridor. And it was, it's an impressive effect. They got a mirror maze in the darkness. Mm-hmm. It's very, very theatrical. It's very cool. Out of the three, it's still my favorite.
Yeah. No, I concur.
The lamp is just down the street from the darkness. So if you're going to do the darkness, you may as well do the twofer and get
the lamp. And the lamp has where the darkness. I know for a couple years they were really pushing that it was the old baby carriage factory.
Right.
Now they've kind of let that shtick go. Right. But the lamp really has true. I want to say ambiance. It has ambiance, but I guess like a pedigree of like haunted, like the Limp family in St. Louis is well known for being crazy.
Yeah,
and it's like the Limp Mansion, which is not part of the Limp, you know, the this part.
Yeah,
but it's it is like it's, you know, you can Google it, and I think like ghost, like all some of the ghost programs have been there,
right?
And whatever, it is a haunted mansion, but the Limp Brewery is where they made all the beer, and the Limp. You know, they've been out of business for whatever, 75 years, but it's like the brewery itself is really cool.
Yeah, and you get to walk, when you walk in, they have a giant portrait of the Limp guy, and he comes to life and he talks to you. It's kind of reminiscent of what they have at Disney when you go through the Haunted Mansion there. Then they let you in and you walk down this long spiral staircase.
The longest spiral staircase ever.
And there's smoke and you're like, oh my God. And you get to the bottom and you start moving through. And one thing that the Limp has that the darkness doesn't are whiteouts and dark rooms where it's like, because they had like, I think the darkness does it right at first with this kind of strobe light in your face and you're kind of walking. And you
kind of get you disoriented at first.
Yeah. But the Limp has a number of them and, you know, so it's really creepy and fun, especially if you're with a group. Yeah. You know, you can't see where you're going, or they walk you into a dark room, or you know, and then you're trying to like, you're pulling out your phone, and they got people in there scaring you, and it's there's a number of really good things like that.
Well, and when you're actually down in like the cellars of the brewery where they would be storing the beer if it was still, you know, so it's like you have all this, you know, and it's kind of damp and wet,
right?
And that is a tip where closed, you know. Don't wear sandals.
Yeah.
It can get a little damp. A little damp.
Because you can it's, you know, it's almost musty and you almost feel like you're kind of in a dungeon.
Yeah. And you are.
Yeah. And it's neat. And they have a lot of, like, they kind of got this, like, undead gangster bootleggers type thing going on.
Well, and that's a whole nother thing with the Limp. You know, it was like that area was like a, you know, there was a speakeasy in the 30s. It's right. Like, yeah, that whole complex there has a lot of history to it to play off of. The other thing I will say about the Limp is it's short.
It was the shortest of the three.
You know, and I would say if you are if you are doing them, it's like I would definitely do the darkness and the Limp together. And I even think that they have like a two level
combo packs for all of them.
And you could definitely do if you're in, you know, in the St. Louis area and you're going, well, I don't know if I can make it all the way quote unquote to Fenton.
Right.
Go from like, you know, Soulard to Fenton. Definitely do the darkness and the Limp together.
Yeah.
That is definitely doable. You know, you can go to dinner, do the darkness and Limp, then you can go back to the bar.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
I mean, but there's a number of places around there to eat.
Yeah.
And party or whatever. But the Limp is, what, three blocks away? It's not very far away at all.
It's a three or four minute drive at most. Yeah.
So it's definitely a great twofer to do. Mm-hmm. The final place is out in Fenton. It's about a half an hour away. and it's called Creepy World, and it's an outdoor park, so if you're going to go for that one, expect to spend...
wear your jacket.
Yeah, especially as the nights can become a little chilly or a little more damp, you know, if it's a little, you know, foggy out or whatever. And of all the parks, I have to say that if I've ever been to, Creepy World always seems to have the largest line.
Mm-hmm.
So you definitely, you know, want to get there and get in line.
Yeah.
You know, it is definitely... It is epic. You will spend probably around about a solid hour going through this place. It is really creepy.
Where I think the Darkness and Limp are, while each of them have sections, quote unquote, they're a more unified experience. Where Creepy World is a series of vignettes or rooms. It's like you have the haunted movie theater where you enter, you know, that's kind of like part of the holding area where it's kind of creepy cars and weird things going on.
And a movie playing up there. And
then you kind of progress through, you know, there's like a haunted, greenhouse, and then you kind
of they got a little bit of a haunted mansion going,
and then they got, you know, there's like a haunted hillbilly town or like farm where it's like they got the corn out there, and then they got people in the corn, and they got things going on. They have like the giant weird flaming whatever outhouse thing.
They do have a separate experience there that you have to pay extra for, which is the paintball zombie ride.
Last year that was part of the thing, wasn't it? Last year, but they
did add on quite a bit. I was surprised at the length of it this time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So it was a longer thing.
Yeah, well, the whole park was longer this time. And then if you do the haunted hayride with the paintball experience with the zombies, that's a bit different. And I'd have to say it would probably be worth it if you've got kids that are playing Black Ops Zombies or whatever. The kids would probably get the biggest thrill out of just riding around on this thing,
shooting at zombies
endlessly with paintballs.
Yeah,
you know, and having a great time.
Yeah. Otherwise, though, I would say it was fun, but I think if I was going through again this year, that'd be the one thing I'm like, no, I'm good. You know, let's just move on.
Yeah.
But it was cool. It was cool doing it.
Yeah.
But I think kids really enjoy it. But if you are a paintball fanatic,
that's not going to be the experience you're looking for.
Yeah, exactly.
It's definitely, you're not out there like charging through the battlefield. Doing a, you know, paintball fest. So, but yeah, they just have a number of things, out there.
You know, and you go through, and it's like Silo, the Silo X has been the biggest attraction for, in fact, before Creepy World took it over, Silo X was its own separate attraction, you know, because they had the whole zombie thing going, and it was like the military base. And I've noticed more and more that it has, you know, the Silo X has become less and less of the main attraction. They've added on kind of around it. It used to be Silo X was like the last thing you would go through, and that was the biggest thing. Now they've added more stuff on to the end of that.
And the other thing that they had two of in there that were fun and effective were the mazes. And you had a great time in the maze.
Yeah, great. I don't like mazes to begin with. And then apparently I managed to stumble out one of the, or I shouldn't say I stumbled, I barricade rammed through one of the employee exits back to the beginning of the maze.
Yeah.
And I completely lost Joe and Corey.
Yeah, Joe and I were sitting there, and it's like we see Dan. Okay, you have to understand, this is one of the few enclosed areas.
Yeah.
It is full of fog.
And blacked out.
Nearly pitch black. And you're walking around and you're feeling around trying to find your way out. We see Dan part a set of plastic, and there's this cardboard cutout there. And Joe's like, "Dan, that's not the exit."
And I was gone.
And Dan's like, "Whatever," and just keeps going. And then I lost Joe, and I was with some other couple. Then that couple just happened to disappear in the fog.
Yeah.
And then I ran it back into Joe, and then Joe and I were waiting outside the thing looking for Dan. And then it's like, well, maybe he went ahead, or maybe he just left. We don't know. So the last third of Creepy World, Dan was on his own, and Joe and I were...
I was solo, mingling with the people.
Yeah, but then they had another at the end of, or somewhere through Silo X, there's another maze, short maze.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised at the end there. Was it like that last year where Silo X wasn't the end?
No, Silo X, I believe, was the end of it last year.
And it kind of threw me off. I'm like, okay, well, I'm at the end.
They almost had another two attractions.
Yeah, and I was like, I guess we're still doing more of this.
Yeah, once we hit Silo X, I was kind of expecting, like, oh, this is going to be it. And it wasn't. Mm-hmm. But that's all we can say about it is that it's if you're in the
Fenton one for, you know, if you're buying your attractions by the pound,
right?
Creepy World is the best value, is the longest experience. Yeah. You know, it's I won't say, I don't know how to put it. It's like it's more separated as you go through. It's several shorter scares spread out.
Right.
Than having it like one monster, you're kind of running through this thing. So, but it's fun. And if you're looking to spend an evening, that's kind of the one I would pick. If I was like planning to go out and do this, and I wasn't going to do all three,
right,
it'd be Creepy World, okay, or The Limp and
the
Darkness together. Like that's kind of how I split these.
I would almost do the flip side. If I were going to go out for one,
mm-hmm,
I would go to the Darkness and the Limp.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but I honestly have to say, if I were going to be taken probably a larger group and there were going to be some kids, I'd mm-hmm go do Creepy World.
Yeah.
And I'd go do the paintball experience.
Yeah.
So just depends on what you're looking at. If you're taking some of the youngsters out there or whatever to their first haunted,
mm-hmm,
house experience, Creepy World might be your thing. Probably the most interactive of the bunch,
yeah,
and a lot to see. Kind of never a dull moment.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there's a dull moment at any of them, but you know.
Yeah. The one thing I noticed about Creepy World is that one thing I think they've started, because I noticed in years past, because we were going to that like 7 or 8 years ago. We were going like every year for a while. And people would tend to get bunched up. I notice now they kind of have a couple of checkpoints where they sort of space people back, you know, back out. So it's not like 50 people suddenly running through the, you know, they kind of space it back, kind of which I think is better.
Yeah,
you know,
I have to agree. Overall, it was a great experience.
Yeah, they're fun,
and I love doing them every year. And I think that Shannon, who's been part, mm-hmm, of the game nights, is planning on taking his daughter, and I might take my son out to do a group of them for the evening and see what, you know,
yeah,
see what they think of it. My kid's kind of interested, so anyway,
what is next on the penultimate episode? Come on, Corey, penultimate.
Let's see. One of the things I have to say, it's like just to give you a little we'll do an early holiday shopping thing. I know it's way early to think about it.
Did you buy something?
No. But I got it for my kid for his birthday, which was the Disney Infinity.
Oh, okay.
We got to bring that in there. Which we've been playing. I've been playing it. He's been playing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to basically say this about Disney Infinity. It is more expensive than the Skylanders,
mm-hmm,
game by about $15. The figures, all the individual figures, are twice the price.
It's Disney.
And it's Disney. That being said, it is a, the game side of it is relatively simple. You can play it at just about any age. I couldn't imagine that they'd have too much difficulty with it. But we've been messing around with what is called the toy box side of the game,
mm-hmm,
which is where you build your own kind of game and your own little world and everything, and that could get really detailed and involved, and it looks like it could be a hell of a lot of fun.
You know what it kind of reminded me of, and I think it's going to attract the same like mindset of people, is the Minecraft mentality, where you're sort of out there building stuff and making stuff happen, where instead of like, you know, mining red rock and whatever, and you know,
right,
you're picking up track pieces so you make your own tracks and castles and whatnot.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it is. They call it, it's one of those open sandbox games where you can kind of build and everything. And it's like, having played Minecraft and played it quite a bit with my kid and kind of on my own, is Minecraft the one thing that... there's a number of things that kind of just get old about it. It's just like, for the Xbox, it's just there's... It's so sluggish and slow with the mm-hmm. with the updates
mm-hmm.
and things that they bring out for it. So it's just like, once you kind of get in there and you it's like the game started off and didn't even have the end of the game in there mm-hmm. where you fight the dragon. So it's like I went through and I built a castle. I mean, I did it all and I just built a castle, dug out all the stuff, got all my ore, did everything, and I was like, all right, and done. Nothing else to do in this game. I guess I could build something, whatever. And it just
Mega Man.
Yeah, I built Mega Man. I built a big old pixel Mega Man. But it was just, it, you know, it's really just you. The things that my kid and his friends try and do in that game, you can do in Disney Infinity.
Mm-hmm.
They want to have like parkour courses, and they want to have, you know, Hunger Games style battles. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you could build the Hunger Games in this thing. You could put a mass of weapons and crap. And you could build traps, and you could have woods and caves and everything else, and you could run around and blast each other until your heart's content. You could do Death Race 2000 in this game. Each of you could get a car or a character in a car. They got rockets, they got missiles, they got machine guns, they got everything that you can add on to these things. You can build the ultimate death track inside of a city, racing around, shooting each other, and, you know, have monsters and people and everything else riding around. There's like I said, there's no mm-hmm. end to the number of things that you can do.
Hours of fun.
Yeah. And apparently there's a side-scroller mode where you can turn it into a two-dimensional type of thing. Yeah, and you can create Mario-style games, too. So I would have to say if you've been on the fence about it, because of its price or whatever, it is a pricey thing. It is an investment, to be sure. But I would have to say that it looks, after having played and experienced.
Now, did you play the Skylanders version?
I did play the Skylanders.
So how do the two compare?
The Skylanders game, where it has, if it has anything over the Disney game, is that inside of the what they call the playsets, which are the game mm-hmm. side of the things. Like, they have Monsters University. In Monsters University, there's three playable characters. Mm-hmm. Now, the game comes with three playable characters, but each one is for a different toy mm-hmm. playset, and none of them can cross over to another mm-hmm. person's toy set. So okay. you can't take Mike Wazowski over to Mr. Incredible's world
mm-hmm.
and have him run around doing missions with Mr. Incredible. However, the two of them can play in the toy box where you build your own okay. game. So... In Skylanders, when you play the game, at any time that you want to switch characters, you just pick one up, put one down. And if somebody okay. wants to join in, they just turn on a controller, put another character on the portal, and boom, they're in the game.
So Disney didn't want to mix their intellectual property across genres.
Well, is basically what it came down to. They didn't want to try and figure out. I guess they just didn't want to cross-program, the... 100 characters or whatever they have.
I have a feeling it was more like a marketing guy there was like, well, we don't want brand confusion among Mr. Incredible and Monsters University. We want to keep those separate, and that way we can sell more of these things.
Well, to tell you what, the number of things that you have to... I mean, it is a game that basically you will be paying for and continuing to pay for, because they have things that are already... Mm-hmm. that are in the game to unlock for characters that aren't even out yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I want to unlock this. Oh, but you need Sorcerer Mickey. Well, Sorcerer Mickey doesn't come out for another 2 or 3 months or something like that. It's like, that's awesome.
Keep stringing it out. That's right. That's how Disney makes all that money to finance those Star Wars movies.
Yep. But I have
we
to
love
say,
you, Disney.
I'm trying to think. I have all the play sets for it, so I have all the characters for it.
Aren't you cool?
Oh, yes. And I have to say, and I've beaten every playset for mm-hmm. it. And I have to say, probably the most fun one that I had the most mm-hmm. fun with, for the most part, was kind of a cross between The Incredibles
mm-hmm.
and The Lone Ranger.
Hmm. Which I find funny.
Yeah. The worst of the playsets, in my opinion, it was probably Cars, by mm-hmm. far. Cars was just... I don't know. The missions were just... It's just such a limited thing. Yeah. The missions were dumb. It was like, oh...
Well, you don't have any opposable thumbs. Yeah, you know, so it's like,
drag me to the gas station. Yeah. Ding, I'm at the gas station. Do a jump. I did a jump. You know, it's just like, it's... Mm-hmm. It was pretty lame. It's fun to drive around the cars, you know, and mm-hmm. have the little races and shoot each other and everything like that. That's fun. But other than that, that's by far one of the lamest play sets.
Yeah.
Pirates was fun. Monsters University was okay. Pirates is worth playing because at the end of Pirates, when you beat the game and you defeat Davy Jones, you get the Kraken.
Oh, that's cool.
So when you're...
Release
when
the Kraken.
You can still continue to go through and search for pieces and fight other pirates and stuff like that. And if you're, as long as you're controlling your ship and you're not running a cannon, when you're controlling the ship, you can hit the Y button and the Kraken will come up and wrap itself around one of the attacking ships and drag them down to the bottom. It's pretty cool. So, yeah.
Do that to Tonto.
Yeah.
Drag him down. Drag, oh.
But you can't cross over Tonto.
See, Disney, you suck.
Yeah. So, anyway. See, this is another reason I brought it up. Dan's girlfriend, Tina Savi. She's a huge Disney fan.
Oh, yeah. I am going to own this before too much longer.
Yeah, so...
Does it work on the Wii?
Yes, it does.
Or you have to have the Wii U?
They have it for the Wii, the Wii U, the Xbox, the PS3... Nintendo 3DS.
As soon as the living room's unburied... I have a feeling I'm going to own this.
Yeah. You should start buying it now.
Yeah.
So that she doesn't miss out on any of the pieces. Well, it would be a great Christmas present.
Have her miss out on any of the
pieces. I can tell.
Pieces.
Let's see. What else do I have today? I finished a book today. I was listening to an audiobook. Something really old. Really old. But it was written in the same year I was born.
Well, no, Corey, so that is really old.
That's really ancient.
Was there color when you were a kid?
That was something that came about in the 80s.
Oh, okay. I wondered.
Yeah. But the book, I just kind of got wild hair to listen to it, was the book called First Blood.
Oh, which okay.
Turned into the Sylvester Stallone movie in like 82. And it's written by David Morrell. And I was kind of, it's like, I really liked the First Blood. I've enjoyed all the Rambo movies to some degree or another. But I got kind of an affinity for the original First Blood.
Well, movie. You know, the original First Blood movie is a different movie than the rest of the Rambo movies.
Definitely.
That whole movie has a different purpose than the other Rambo movies.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I have to say that it's like basically the book and the movie they parallel each other, but they seldom intersect.
Gotcha. Okay.
Basically, you know, it's, you know, if you know the movie First Blood, you know, Sylvester Stallone comes to this little quiet community. Mm-hmm. He's looking for an old buddy that he was in the war with. Finds out he's dead. He's kind of wandering through town. Cop comes along. He's like, you know, let me give you a ride to the end of town. You know, they don't really care for your kind here. Drives him out of town. The guy's like, can I get something to eat? And he's like, walk somewhere else. And he's like, it's like 50 miles. He's like, forget it. You know, so the cop keeps pushing him out of town, and Sylvester Stallone is like, screw that guy. I'm going to walk back in and get something to eat. Winds up getting arrested. The police officers are jerks down in the prison. Mm-hmm. Breaks out, you know.
Hilarity ensues. Guards,
you know, rides a motorcycle through town, goes up into the woods. They go to get him. And it's man versus man.
Yeah.
Versus army, and then it comes back to the town where the, you know, the cop is at. And all that happens in the book, basically. Mm-hmm. Rambo comes to town, but he's not there looking for his friend. He's just a drifter fresh out of Nam.
Yeah.
He is a Green Beret, just like in the movie. Mm-hmm. But in the movie, in the book, he does not look like Sylvester Stallone. He has long hair.
Yeah.
He's very hippie-ish, and he's got a long beard. The image that I really had of him the whole time was of Hugh Jackman in the most recent, The Wolverine.
Okay.
Where in the very beginning, like, Wolverine is hanging out in the woods, and he's got this full beard, mustache, and long hair. And that's kind of how I pictured John Rambo in this book. And, the cop is like, you know, well, let me kind of just get you out of town.
Shoo you out of town.
The cop takes him out of town. John Rambo comes back into town to get a burger. Cop finds him at the diner, says, well, I took you out of town. Get your burger. Let's go. You know, and the cop is much nicer than the Brian Dennehy cop. But he's also kind of a jerk and to some degree. And Rambo is much more vocal than he was in the movie. Mm-hmm. And Rambo can be a bit of he's pushing back just as much as the cop is. Rambo wasn't going to let himself be pushed anymore in the book. And so anyway, as the book goes on, you find that it's just about kind of like the mentality of these two guys. Rambo in the book, he really comes across like Smeagol in the Lord of the Rings, like Gollum, where he's literally talking to himself in his head. And one side's going, you know, if you cut your hair and you shaved your beard a bit, you wouldn't have all this trouble and you could drift wherever you wanted. And he's like, and the other side's like, no, to hell with that. Mm-hmm. I'll do whatever I want. And, you know, it shouldn't matter. And this guy's pushing me. And he's just having these conversations.
There's a turtle conflict.
And then Teagle, the sheriff, he kind of has these little things where it's just like, you know, am I pushing too hard? Am I not? But he's more questioning of himself rather than just arguing with himself. Mm-hmm. But as the book goes on, it just definitely it strays from what you see in the movie. You know, Teasel takes his men into the woods. The sheriff takes his men in the woods to hunt Rambo in the movie, and Rambo sets up booby traps for him. Mm-hmm. Rambo, you know, finds all this equipment and everything. He has his quintessential Rambo knife and all that stuff. And, you know, he tells him, you know, don't push it. I'll give you a war you won't believe. In the book, Rambo breaks out of the station fresh out of a shower. They were trying to shave him. It's kind of the same thing. You know, they made him shower. They did not hose him off like in the movie. But they made him shower. And as they were going to shave him, he's naked. He has a flip out and leaves. He runs out of the station naked. So for... roughly 8 hours of the book, he rides through town naked on this motorcycle. He's running through the woods naked, and he runs into some moonshiners who give him some clothes and stuff, and he gets a gun. Then he goes back and he kills he kills the dogs that are hunting him.
Yeah.
And he kills everybody that's with the sheriff. He kills everybody. Anybody that he runs into, they're dead. You know, it's like he's trying to sneak out. He's trying to get to the road, and he happens upon a guy, and the guy's like, "Well, you're the." And then Rambo rams a knife into him and guts him open. Rambo does not have his Rambo knife. He has just a knife that somebody gives him. The moonshiners gave him. He's just, you know, he in the movie he's like he. There's that scene where he kind of falls off the cliff. It's very similar in the book. He's naked on the cliff, I think, at this point. I can't remember. He might be. But anyway, he's on this cliff, and he falls, and he busts a rib. And so those are always messing with him. In the movie, he kind of just cuts his arm open, then he sews it back up. You know? And, you know, he throws a rock and knocks the guy out of the helicopter, and the guy falls, and whatever. In the book, for the guy in the helicopter that's shooting at him, Rambo has a rifle at that point.
Yeah.
Right. Rambo pops up and shoots the guy in the face in the helicopter, and brains and everything go all over the helicopter, and the guy piloting is like, and he like just he jumps down on the floor. The pilot jumps on the floor of the helicopter. The helicopter goes and blows up, kills the pilot. He kills everybody, you know. And every time he's basically, I don't want to do this anymore. It's like, too bad. I'm killing everybody. You know, so, I don't know. And the end of the book is different than the movie.
Does Rambo die at the end of the book?
He does.
Yeah.
But it's not how you'd think. Colonel Troutman.
Yeah.
Who comes in. In the movie, he's kind of like, you know, I trained him to kill. And he's, and he's like that. But he's not like, I trained him to kill. He's like, I trained him to survive.
Yeah.
You know, I don't train people to kill, to be murderers. Mm-hmm. I train them to survive. And he's like, and you guys, he's kind of like where he wants to see Rambo win.
Mm-hmm.
But he knows that Rambo's done enough wrong.
He can't. Yeah.
Right. But it's also like Rambo is like the poster boy for the school that mm-hmm. Troutman runs to train okay. Green Berets, and Rambo is the best Green Beret that he's ever trained. So there's this part of him that it's like, you know, if Rambo has a shot to get through this whole army and mm-hmm. fucking kick ass all the way out of here, I'm almost behind him. You know, and it's just like, it's just this weird thing, and he tries talking him down on the radio at one point. Then it's kind of towards the end of the book, and like Rambo is not affectionate
mm-hmm.
towards Troutman like he is in the movie. In the movie, Troutman and him have this real relationship. In the book, Troutman was just this voice on an intercom mm-hmm. at the school that made life harder.
Yeah.
And so he knew him by voice, but they weren't out there together. They weren't in the blood and guts together. He is just, you know...
A guy.
But at the end of the book, like, Rambo's all beat up. He's been shot by Teasel. Teasel's been shot by Rambo. And, like, Teasel almost is psychically linked to mm-hmm. Rambo. He's so much been thinking about him and is in his head. He knows exactly where he is. He knows mm-hmm. exactly what he's doing at all the time. But it's, like, it's literally, like, a psychic link. And, it was really kind of an odd choice for the book, but it kind of mm-hmm. works in a way. And so the two of them are kind of like laying there. Troutman's with them. And Troutman goes over and blows and shoots Rambo mm-hmm. in the head to put him out of his misery, because he's got this like this nasty wound. And he knows he's going to die and he deserves better than just to lay there dying mm-hmm. like an animal. So he shoots him in the head, and Troutman's like, what happened? He goes, I thought I heard a gas station explode. Because Rambo had set them all on fire.
Yeah.
And he's like, I know, I shot him in the head. And he's like, oh. And then...
Book over.
And then Teasel dies.
Oh.
So they both die. But I have to say, it was a really, really... Spoilers.
Yeah.
Book's been out for 40 years. But it was a really interesting book, a really fast book.
Mm-hmm.
I saw one review for it where some guy's like, he goes, I was waiting for this book to get going, and I'm like, this book gets going. It's just because he's not killing somebody every 5 seconds.
Yeah, what's wrong with you, Corey? You should not, kill.
Yeah, you know, does not mean that he's not. You know,
I guess what people are like, it is not a dramatization of the movie. You know right. what I mean? It's.
All right.
Penultimate episode, Corey.
Penultimate episode. I think we'll finish out with even more stuff that we have from Contamination.
Yep.
We have two interviews with some horror ladies. The first will be Miss Lynn Laurie. She was mm-hmm. in a number of things, including what she was in.
Only had Cat devices.
People.
It's on the side. Here.
On the side. What's the...
Corey is learning how to use modern technology. Let me see.
Oh, there it is.
There you go. Swipe.
Just swipe anywhere?
Yeah.
Ah, that's awesome. Anyway, she's in The Crazy, she's in The Shiver, she's in Cat People, and she is gorgeous.
Well, there you go.
She was, you know, a femme fatale at the time. She's still mm-hmm. a good-looking woman now, and she's absolutely friendly as hell, and she's got some new movies that are out. And it was funny, I had just seen this one on Netflix when I was talking to her. You know, and she's like, I was just in this. And I was like, I just watched that. And you'll hear about that during the interview. But she's absolutely wonderful to talk to. And I'd seen her all my life in a number of movies. Here it is, my interview with Miss Lynn Laurie. Hello, everybody. This is Corey, and I'm here with Miss Lynn Laurie. Thanks for coming on the show and talking to us.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about how you got interested in acting and where did you get your start?
Well, I actually was always interested in acting. I worked, even from the time I was like 3 years old. I played, I think, a lamb in a Christmas play or something like that. And, I did school plays, majored in speech and drama, had a scholarship to college in drama, worked summer stock, worked with John Belushi in summer stock. And then I went to New York City and just happened to answer an ad in backstage for I Drink Your Blood. And that was sort of how I got started in the horror genre at that part.
So you've been in quite a number of different ones. You have The Crazies, you have Shivers, you have
cat people.
Right.
Is that a genre that you particularly enjoy, or is that just kind of what you got caught up in?
Well, I mean, I really do enjoy it. I watch all the horror films that come out. I mean, I'm a big horror fan. Would I like to do a classical drama and win an Academy Award? Yes, that would be a great thing to do. But I do enjoy working in horror, and I've been doing a lot of new films. So, you know, most of my fans know me from those old films, but I'm really hoping that they'll start seeing some of the new ones.
So everybody gets to see you guys on screen and the performances and all that. Do you have a favorite behind-the-scenes moment that's something that we as the audience don't get to see, a story from your career that just stands out? It can be humorous, whatever, just something from your career.
Well, when I did I Drink Your Blood, we were all smoking grass and actually doing other things as well, like sunshine acid, things like that. Not when we were working, you know. But a lot of the crew and the cast, not me particularly, but they had stashes. And somehow or another, someone told the police about this wild hippie group that was, going crazy in Sharon Springs, New York, right across from this Hasidic place, church. And the police, we were on set, and someone warned everyone. And I've never seen so many people running for their cars and running to get to their houses, and so many toilets flushed at one time in my whole life. So that was kind of a funny event.
So you spoke that you're in a lot of new different films and everything. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing currently.
Well, currently I have... Hi, I'll be with you in just one second.
Oh, I'm with him.
Oh, okay. Never mind then.
I was just
going to
say, Corey, that's another one.
Oh, cool. I'm in that. Theater Bazaar. I'm in the last one. Sweets.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the hostess. I cut off the guy's head.
Oh, my gosh.
I literally just watched it like 2 days ago.
I have a film coming out called Model Hunger that Debbie Rochon directed. It's her directorial debut. I play a Southern Belle serial killer, and I am really not nice. So I'm very excited about that. I also have Dante Tomaselli's Torture Chamber coming out, which I have a really good part in. Night of the Sea Monkey I did this year, which is a really fun horror comedy. I just did The Grim Becoming, which is a horror comedy, which is coming out. I've got The Super, George's Intervention, Basement Jack. You know, all those are new films. And I'm doing another film called The Bloody Clementines this year with Debbie Rochon and April Burrell. So I have just lots and lots of things, coming out. So,
is there one that really stands out that you want people to know about? Like, is it the performance that you really want them to see the most?
Model Hunger. Yeah, that's, I think, going to put me in a different... I'll never be cast as a victim again after that movie.
All right.
Yeah, she's vicious.
Sweet. So, do you have an online presence at all? Any place where people can find you online?
Yes, I have a website, which is always in construction, but, www.lynnlowry.com. But the easiest way to find me is on Facebook. I have like, a lot of people on Facebook, and you can just go there, and I always try to get back to everyone and let everyone know what I'm doing and where I'm going and all that.
Well, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day. I really appreciate talking to you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for asking.
And that was my interview with Miss Lynn Lowry. It was really great talking to her. The next lady that I spoke with was a woman that was almost urban legend to me before I even knew who she was. When I was in high school, there was a movie that I was in art class, and I had some friends there that were girls, and one of them came to me one day and she's like, "Oh my God, I saw this craziest movie with my boyfriend this weekend. We rented a video." And she goes, "It was like a snub film." And I was like,
"Well, of course I want to see this."
I was like, "What was it?" And she's like, my God, it was called I Spit on Your Grave.
Oh, God, yes.
And she's like, and she goes, this movie? She goes, this girl, like, she goes, she gets raped on a rock, and she goes, oh, I felt so bad for her. She goes, it seems so real, and she was just going on and on and on and on about this horror that this woman went through in this movie. And it stuck with me for so long. It was like, I remember being out of high school at one point. I was in a video store and I saw it. And I wasn't even a member of the video store. But I was like, I'm getting a membership right now just so I can see this movie that this girl was traumatized
by in high school. Yeah.
I don't know, when I watched it, I wasn't nearly as traumatized. I'd seen a number of, like, you know, these kind of grindhouse-ish type of horror.
Trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Type of films. But it is one of the ones that definitely has one of the larger cult followings. And Camille Keaton is that woman in there who goes through all the hell. And she went through hell making that movie on top of it. But she was an absolute sweetheart. She signed a poster over to me and gave it to me. I was really very honored for her to do that. And I was very pleased with our interview. Here it is, my interview with Miss Camille Keaton.
Hello, everybody. This is Corey, and I'm here with Miss Camille Keaton. Welcome to the program.
Well, it's an honor to be here. I'm having a lot of fun.
Tell us a little bit about how you got your start.
Well, I got my start. I went to Italy. At first, I wanted to go to Los Angeles, but didn't make it there. I ran out of money.
Don't touch that dial.
I ran out of money on the way out there. Came back home. Oh, I was involved in a car wreck. Anyway, long story short, I got over to Italy finally and started my career there doing extra work, doubling for actresses that couldn't swim or didn't want to swim, things like that. And then I set my photograph into Zeffirelli, who was doing Sister Luna, Brother Sun, like the Romeo and Juliet. And I never heard from Zeffirelli.
Welcome everybody to Contamination DEFCON 4.
See what fun this is?
Thanks for coming.
Anyway,
at 6 o'clock,
Dalamano.
Contamination, a convention story. It's 6 o'clock in the movie room.
Okay, Massimo Dalamano.
The movie room's over by the lobby.
He went to Zeffirelli's office and went through his files, and he saw my pictures and he called me, and somehow we understood each other because I was still learning to speak Italian, and he said, "I want to see you," and I went over to his office and. I actually tried to talk him out of using me because I had not had an acting lesson and because it was a challenging part. And he said, "Don't worry, I'm going to be directing you," and so forth and so on. And so we made this film called What Have You Done with Solange? And that's basically how I got into it. First extra work, first the desire, the dream has to be there.
Right.
And then the extra work, the double, the stunt work, whatever, and then you get your first part. And it turns out that the film is gaining in popularity today even, and I had a small part in it, but I got very good reviews. And as I said, it starts out with a dream, and don't let anybody get in the way of your dreams. Don't let listen to anybody who says that you can't do that. What do you know about acting or whatever it is? Or who do you know and who do you think you are? Let it go in one ear and out the other and follow your dream, but do get a day job. And then I just made one movie after another in Italy, and then I got homesick for America, came to America, and moved to New York. Atlanta was, after living in Rome, Rome was a hard act to follow. I went to New York, and I got I Spit on Your Grave out of the trade paper backstage.
Okay.
And I was a lucky girl that got the part. And the rest is history, I guess. Anything you want to ask?
The movie is I Spit on Your Grave. I've seen it, and I've seen it more than once. It is a crazy ordeal. I mean, and I can only imagine what it was like to be on the set and to have to go through all the things and all the shooting and all that. Can you just? I'm sure you've answered the question a million times, but can you tell us just a little bit about your feelings and your thoughts on doing it?
My feelings were, I was concerned, very concerned that my grandmother might see the movie one day. I was hoping it wouldn't come out, and I never liked doing nudity. I mean, that was a thing that concerned me some, but actually when the director says the word action, you concentrate on what you're doing, and you forget about it, and then the wardrobe, when he says cut, comes running up with a robe, and then my feelings were during the rape scenes. To me, I'm from I call it the school of Italian acting. A lot of technique. I mean, I certainly didn't use the method way of acting, and I Spit on Your Grave. That would have killed me, you know? And you just learn how to project. And if you've ever been angry, and of course you have, or scared, you put all that stuff in there and try to project it out. And so the movie came out, and I thought maybe it wouldn't, and all is good now. You know, in the end, it turned out well for me because it gained in popularity and it's made a difference in some ladies' lives too, which made me very happy. And what else caught me?
No, it's fine. So they did do a remake of it. Did you think that was necessary that they were going to do it, or did you feel it should have just stood alone by itself? Have you seen the remake? What is your reactions to that?
Well, I was surprised, actually stunned, when I heard they were going to do a remake of I Spit on Your Grave. I mean, it's really the same plot, but a different movie. I went to see it in Miami, and I thought they did a really good job on the movie. I was a little, my feelings were somewhat hurt that they didn't call me and say, would you like to do a little cameo or something like that? But they may not have had anything for me because it was a low budget film. But they could have called me and asked me, but as it is, they didn't. But then they made, they just wrapped a sequel to it. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that they were doing a sequel.
Yeah, I think it was filmed in Bulgaria. With some European actors, and it's to be released, I believe, in the fall. And it's amazing, because then when they did the remake, I said, you know, the next thing is going to happen is they're going to do a series. I didn't mean that kind of series, but it's pretty amazing. And now I get to come to these conventions like this one. I love this convention. And I love interfacing with fans, and I make friends, and it's fun. And, you know, I go home, and then it's kind of a letdown when you go home. And I did a couple of cameos in some films, if you don't mind if I mention that. I might as well. I did a cameo in the remake, Plan 9, with Johnny Johnson. He's the director. I did the part of Vampira, and I met him on the set of a movie called, which is still in post-production, Deadlines, with Tracy Stanton directing, and I play Principal Beasley, and I really love doing that, yelling at all the students and stuff like that. Then I don't know what's going to be next.
Right.
I have some conventions coming up.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to be in Pittsburgh in September, and then the next week after that, Atlanta. And then in October at Son of Monster Palooza in Los Angeles. And November, I'm going to Germany. So I have a lot to look forward to.
Last question I'll ask you. Do you have a favorite behind the scene moment from your career? Something maybe not from like I Spit on Your Grave, but anything that just kind of stands out—a humorous story, funny moment, or anything.
Oh well. Probably more than I haven't thought about that. You know, I should be prepared for that question. I was doing a movie with Franco Frankie. He's like a comic actor. He also worked with Buster Keaton in a movie. And the stuntman was showing them how to throw a punch or something. And I was standing, I thought, a couple of feet behind the stuntman. Next thing you know, he goes... throws his arm out, and I'm on the floor like that, you know, and it's like, it was, I didn't get hurt, so it was kind of funny, you know. He said, oh, I didn't mean to do that. But I'm sure there are other stories, too. I should think about those. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to talk to us. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, Corey, it was certainly nice talking to you.
And that was my interview with Camille Keaton. We have three more interviews, which we'll save for our centennial episode.
Post-Archon centennial episode.
Oh, that was another thing. There is a St. Louis tradition here in Missouri that is coming up this weekend. So if Dan has this up, possibly by tomorrow.
Yeah, you're doing good.
Yeah. You will have an opportunity to go to it started as a beer bash,
mm-hmm.
and they built a gaming convention around it.
That's about right.
Basically, that's when you hear about Archon here in Missouri, Archon is everybody that talks about it, it's like, oh, you got to go to Archon, the room parties.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear so much about guests. They do have gaming.
Yep.
They have
a couple of guests.
They have a costume thing.
Which is very, very, very popular. They have a game room. The dealer hall is large enough, but quaint.
Yeah. But, you know, but the thing that you hear about more is the room parties. It is one of the more expensive conventions as well. And if you pay your admission and get your badge... Beer. They have as much beer as you can drink,
and honestly, that is a drinking convention.
Uh-huh.
It is where nerds go to get drunk, mm-hmm. more so than, and for a long time it was the biggest convention in St. Louis,
right.
More or less.
Yeah,
you know, it's like there have been other conventions that have come and go. The Gallifrey conventions have come, TARDIS cons have come and gone. Yeah. Archon is in its 37th year,
right?
Running more or less continuously. There were a couple years where the hotel they were at shut. There was, I think, one year the hotel they were at shut down 2 months before the convention. There was another year where I think the hotel was like torn mm-hmm. down or something. You know, it's like they've had a couple of things beyond their control, but they've run pretty continuous since I think 77 or something or.
Mm.
And they are a local legend. In fact, when they were closer to the airport, the frat boys from the college would show up just to drink beer. They would pay their money because you got and it's like there used to be it still exists a little bit, the drink-ons, you know, they were Klingons, you know, and they would go around handing out beer from their whatever, you know, the blood wine. And it's really what you're paying for and it you know, at this point, it's $65 for a three-day pass, $45 for a Saturday only.
Right.
If you would have registered in, you know, June, it was like $45 for the whole weekend, which is much more reasonable. But not everyone thinks to register in, you know, six months ahead of time.
Right.
But what you get is they have a conference room in the hotel, and they have it's beer.
Yeah.
And it's like, and if you go to the room parties, almost all the room parties are on the first floor, and you wind up running the circuit where it's last year when I went, there was a room. It was Fallout themed. They had all a bunch of people dressed up as like Fallout characters, and they had like a Geiger counter. And when you went inside, it's like they were playing music from the cantina in the game, and at some point they were giving out. through the like earlier in the day in the con, they were giving out like the Nuke Cola bottle caps.
Right.
And if you brought them a cola cap, you got a drink. So I guess they had ways to get them throughout the con, or you could just you know. And basically, the thing with the room parties is they are just giving out booze.
Right.
I think if you had the Nuke Cola, you got like the special drink.
Right.
You know, they had like an upgraded version.
Yeah, somebody was telling me years ago that they'd gone a couple of times, and they said basically just walk around with a cup,
yeah,
and people will keep it,
yeah,
filled.
Yeah, I sort of have a personal policy about accepting alcohol from random people in a hallway. Yes, I do. I am not accepting anything that comes out of the back of someone's back, you know, like backpack. Although, yeah, I will freely take it from a room party. I don't know. It makes me weird.
What about a squirt bottle?
You know, we shouldn't discuss that. The statute of limitations have not expired on that night. And, I just want everyone to know that I passed my random drug test, and everything was fine.
Yay!
So, it is a lot of fun. It is, if you're very into your gaming, there is plenty of gaming to be had. I find it more to be a day and a half convention where you kind of go for the day and then maybe a little bit the next day.
The next day is because you're too drunk.
To have left. Yeah. Well, the other trick is they have a fairly extensive art show and kind of art, you know, where it's different from like Contamination, where they don't really do like an auction or anything. It's just... you know, art on display, and then you can do the silent auction thing, and like whoever has the highest bid on the sheet wins.
Right.
And you know, and I usually pick up a couple pieces every time I go. So you typically have to come back on Sunday to pick up your art.
Right.
So typically what happens is I go Saturday for most of the day, and then you go, you know, Sunday I have to go back to pick up my art. It was a lot easier when Tina Sabi like lived in Collinsville.
Yeah.
This year I'll be making a little bit of a trek back and forth.
So are you not going to be partaking in the room festivities?
Oh, I will be, but somebody has to drive home.
Oh, that's what cabs are for.
Yeah, I don't want to discuss that. Yeah, there are almost no rooms left in the hotel. There if you're on our Facebook page, you'll see that I shared a post from the Archon fan. The Archon doesn't have a fan page; they have a fan like a group, which makes it awkward to share things because you can't join a group as a page. So I have to join it under my personal account, share it to the Nerdy Times, and then the Nerdy Times has to share my share. It's kind of an awkward two-step process that I wish didn't have to happen. But anyway, there was a person that called the attached hotel, which isn't really attached. That's a whole nother discussion. That they had three rooms left as of like noon today, and that was it. And probably the next two closest hotels were out of rooms. Huh. This is really something where not a lot of people outside the St. Louis area come to. It isn't like a Comic-Con, which will attract people far and wide. But the people that go, you know, you're going to get people from, if you're not living directly in Collinsville, you're probably getting a hotel room if you're partaking of the festivities. Well,
that's what you go for, is the beer.
You stay
for the games.
Yeah.
You know,
and I will say, you know, you compare it, comparing it to a Comic-Con is not really a contest. You know, Comic-Con has a much bigger dealer area, much bigger guests, I want to say bigger, better panels, you know.
Yeah, I looked at the guests for Archon this year, and
it's like, yeah,
I wasn't sure who they were at all.
Yeah, Archon is always going to have a spot because of the drinking in the room parties. That is really, you know, if they ever, and they won't ever, because you know, one of the years that Archon moved from their current location, they were right back there the next year because the hotel kind of didn't renew their contract because they didn't want to deal with the hassle. And it is a hassle. You got like 1,000 people, 500 people wandering the lobby of your hotel wasted. Okay.
Right.
This is an issue. But they didn't have them 1 year, and apparently they didn't make their yearly budget. So the next year they were more than willing to put up with the hassle. So it's just kind of how it works. So as long as people are going and having fun, and as long as the hotel is still making money for the hotel, they're doing it.
Yep. And
so yeah,
Joe and I will be going to Chili Fest instead.
Woo! Yeah, we're going to be sick in our own ways the next day.
Yep. But that's it for the 99th episode.
The penultimate.
The penultimate 99th episode.
Penultimate. The penultimate. The pen.
You're getting a little too excited, Dan.
So anyway, if you would like to contact us, Corey, if people wanted to tell us, like, their favorite moment from the Nerdy Times, the last 99 episodes of the Nerdy Times, if they wanted to tell us what their favorite moment of the show was, how would they get a hold of us to do that?
They don't do that, Dan.
Imagine the fan.
Oh, imagine
the fan wanted to contact us.
Well, they would email us at info@nerdytimes.com. That's what they would do.
And if they didn't have email, Corey, how else could they get a hold of us?
They wouldn't.
The fan.
Oh, the fan.
Remember the fan.
They could go to our Facebook page and they could leave a comment.
Woo!
They could go to our Twitter account at @Twitter/TheNerdyTimes. Or what else could they do?
They could go to the website and leave a comment under the show.
They go to the nerdytimes.com and leave
a
comment.
Or they could go to iTunes and leave us a wonderful comment.
Yeah. And
a rating.
That would be awesome. They could do all those things. But they don't.
But they could.
They could.
And that is, Corey, our goal in the 99 episodes is about what could happen.
That's right.
Not what does happen.
It's all about the potential.
And we have a lot of it.
We do.
Much like a boulder falling off a cliff.
There's
a lot of potential energy there.
I have met two fans of the Nerdy Times.
Woo!
And one of them told us what we do is important.
That's right.
And
I was even there for that.
Yeah, and I felt weirdly uncomfortable, but yet special.
Well, Corey, you are weirdly uncomfortable, yet special.
That's it, everybody. Go out to the darkness. If you're a geek that likes beer, go to Archon. If you like chili, go to Belleville, Illinois, this weekend for the Chili Festival.
It's a very East Side type of weekend.
That's not right.
In the usual way St. Louisans have an East Side weekend.
That's right. And if you're thinking about a present for your kid for Christmas, think
or your
Disney Infinity.
Disney obsessed girlfriend.
Yeah.
All right, Corey. Till next time, to the ultimate episode.
This is Dan and Corey saying, have a great week.
Goodbye. Goodbye!